It's time for three stories you should know, and this week we're going to do some math. I'm joined by NHL.com's Emily Benjamin and by sports writer and editor Patrick Ruby via Skype. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having me.
It's always good to be here.
Patrick, I have to start with you. Do you have your calculator ready?
I do. I want to talk about finances, but don't be scared. We're talking about the United States Olympic Committee. The USOC is about to name a new executive director, and Sally Jenkins of The Washington points out in an excellent column that they have a chance to pick a real reformer. And they need a real reformer because while they've been busy looking the other way on sexual abuse, they have not been too busy to spend way too much of their money enriching themselves. And it has revenues of $336 million. But only $28 million of that goes to athletes directly in terms of cash and assistance. So where does the rest go? $45 million went to administrative staff wages and salaries. $55 million goes to national sport governing bodies, and most of that means it goes to executives too. The head of U.S. ski and snowboarding gets a $724,000 yearly salary. The best indication I can give you of the USOC's priorities is that at the Olympic Training Center cafeteria, the athletes are charged $10 to eat, and USOC staffers only pay $5. The athletes who are the show, they should be making more.
I mean, clearly, there is something wrong here. We've all talked to enough athletes who are Olympians, who've worked at Home Depot, who've worked at these jobs just to find time to train. And that is disheartening for people who work so hard to represent us and our country to not have the support that they need. It does seem like something needs to happen. But those are hard reforms to make, and you really need someone who wants to make change, and you need people to hire someone who wants to make change, and that might be a hard ask.
And it's a Sally Jenkins column, as you both know. She brings out a couple of things in this piece that jump out to me. One of them is that, you know, $14 million come from gifts, but they spend $10 million to market to get those gifts. So that's wrong. But I read her piece, Patrick, and my thought was, who's holding this organization accountable? So that's my question to you.
Well, that's the problem. So, you know, the USOC and all the sport governing bodies, you know, they were created by Congress back in the 1970s under federal law. So Congress should be holding them accountable. We should be holding them accountable. These are our Olympians. You know, the people at the top have sort of created almost a pyramid scheme where all the money, all the wealth that's being generated by the labor is funneling upward. It's completely wrong. And in this case, it's not helping the actual goal, which is we want the best possible athletes in the Olympics. If you have to work two or three jobs and spend half your time at Home Depot, I don't think you're going to be as good of a bobsledder.
All right, Patrick, interesting stuff. Emily?
So when John Tavares was preparing to enter free agency, he's perhaps the biggest free agent in the NHL's cap era, he was incredibly thorough. He had his six finalists meet with him. He had a 77-page book prepared with a deep dive on these six potential teams. But there was one thing he couldn't exactly anticipate, and that was the pull of nostalgia. This is a guy who slept on Toronto Maple Leafs sheets as a kid, as an Oakville, Ontario native. So when he tweeted the news of his decision at 1 p.m. on Sunday, an hour after free agency opened in the NHL, he tweeted, "It was time to live my childhood dream." So it's Toronto, which is a decision that may be a little bit daring. I mean, this is a team that has not won a Stanley Cup in 51 years. It has the potential for a tremendous payoff. They could win a cup and John Tavares could lead them to that cup. And if he does, he is the hero of all heroes. And I guess in the end, isn't that really all we want? A chance to live out our childhood dream?
It sounds very similar to LeBron James when he went back to Cleveland. You know, obviously there's a lot of good business and basketball reasons for that, but it did seem personal to him. He did tell the people, "I want to bring a championship to this area." And he did it. That's pretty cool. That's the kind of thing, you know, it's a cliche, but money can't buy that. You know, the high salary can't buy you that. So I'd say good luck to him. This is pretty neat.
Yeah, and the other thing with this, Emily, not only is it good for John Tavares going back to play for the team that he loved as a child, it's good for the fans, too. I mean, we forget because we get so into these teams. No matter what team you root for in any sport, you live in that city and you feel like the players should be all in because you're in and your grandmother was and your grandparents. And so this is this city's team. But a lot of these guys have no connection to the city. So isn't it more fun to root for a team that you love and you know the player on the team? He doesn't love it just because of the money. He was in the same position that you were in.
There's no question. I mean, that is the really cool thing. And actually, I think there's a part of all of us that can relate to that dream, even if we personally never imagined playing a major league sport, as I didn't quite have the talent. But
yeah, I just missed two.
Close.
It's easier to relate to the rooting part of it than to like what they get paid part or the amount of talent they have part.
I want to begin with this, and I just want you to consider. Imagine if I began this segment by telling you that the people present are Mrs. Emily Benjamin, Ruby, and Holly. No Mr., just Ruby and Holly. That'd be strange, right? Or if I just randomly decided that males should be featured on the big stage 61% of the time, and that 39% of the time would be okay for women. That's ridiculous, right? Well, that's what we have right now with Wimbledon, which is known for its tradition, which clearly is a euphemism for sexism. Wimbledon was the last of the Grand Slam events to split prize money evenly between men and women, and it still identifies its female winners according to their marital status. Wimbledon, unfortunately, has a discrepancy between men and women on featured courts. That's where the 61-39 example comes from. We know Wimbledon has its traditions, and many of them are quaint and, I guess, nice. It's not so bad to wear all white, I guess. But I don't think it's too much to ask Patrick and Emily for Wimbledon to be progressive as well.
I'm all in on them being progressive. I was trying to picture myself or even my husband's face if all of a sudden my bylines were identified as Mrs. Emily Benjamin or even Mrs. D. Barbarisi, which would technically be the name that Wimbledon might call me a few years ago. So it's very strange. This is 2018, I think, last I checked. This seems bizarre that they haven't at least pushed a little bit closer to the current sort of age.
Yeah, here's my question. Who's the constituency for let's keep it the way it is? Like, if they just changed it literally today, would anyone care? Even old rich people at Wimbledon, part of the All England Club, what are they going to do? Pick up their gin and tonics and walk out? Give me a break. Just change it. Just get with 2018. It's not that hard. It's like the dumbest, smallest version of what we saw with the Masters when they wouldn't have a female member, which was like some really big time, ridiculous sexism. This is like ambient, tiny sexism that for some weird, stubborn reason, they just don't want to get rid of.
They will have, if you're married, and where your wedding took place. None of your business. I don't want to tell you where wedding took place.
That to me was so bizarre that it doesn't have a record of where the men were married, if they're married at all, but it's like a social register of sorts. It doesn't even make sense.
Well, good stuff, as usual, from both of you. My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been NHL.com's Emily Benjamin and sports writer and editor Patrick Ruby. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks for having me, as always.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
In the 1980s, German hockey team ECD Iserlohn struggled with money, but their local mayor had a bold idea for a new sponsor.
I've got it. We're going to call out Muammar Gaddafi.
Yes, that Muammar Gaddafi. That story's coming up on Only a Game from NPR.